Topics: Aston Gate on a bright sunny afternoon. It finished City 0, QPR 2. So let's get the facts out of the way first. Last 22 games, won 8, drawn none, lost 14. That's 24 points out of a possible 66. I think I'm right in saying that. And this is, somebody put it on OTIB and it was confirmed by others, this is the first time in the 125-year history of the club that we've lost 5 home games in a row. So this week, we have gone one better than Liverpool, because I think they've lost 4 in a row, and that's the first time it's ever
happened. They lost 5 in a row.
Is it 5 in a row? Oh,
they lost Liverpool. 5 in a row, yeah.
We've equaled Liverpool. So there we go. So the final score, as I say, City 0, QPR 2. Joining me are our regular stalwarts, Ian and Mark. No appearances for them on Radio Bristol this evening because they weren't doing a phone-in because of the rugby. Somebody's playing a piano in the background. I don't think that's you, Ian. I'll come to you first, Ian, as we normally do. Sum up this afternoon in summary. That's what a sum up is. In 20 seconds, then we get into the detail of the game. Over to you, Ian.
I thought we started quite brightly, put them under a bit of pressure, and that for 10 minutes was good. It was okay. Forced a couple of corners, didn't do anything with them because our set pieces are pitiful. And then it all went downhill from then on. Two incredibly poor pieces of defending. How many more times is somebody going to score with that runaround set piece, the loop, as they call it?
Yeah.
How many more times? Because I've seen that succeed against us once. I've seen it succeed against us probably 10 or 12 times in the last few seasons. So if Nigel Pearson didn't know what a massive job he's got on his hands, he does now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mark, yeah, you're summary of the game before we delve into the action.
Bristol City played well for 11 minutes. The next 11 minutes were murder. They were blown away by two pieces of awful defending, which continued continued the pattern of the game where City failed to put pressure on the ball. QPR were too intense, better in possession, better in attack. City wasted what few opportunities they had with poor finishing and awful delivery. A comfortable QPR win. A real pain in the arse.
Yeah, definitely. Pain in the arse. Get it. I got it now. Got it now, Mark. Ian, the starting lineup, it wasn't a case of, you know, oh, he's stuck with the same team. He didn't have much choice, really, did he? I mean, Sessegnon on the left, that was, you know, obvious, but no surprises in the lineup, really, was there?
The only thing I'd have done differently, Dave, and I put this on the Bristol City forum, was I would have played 3-5-2 and I'd have brought in an extra centre-back. Because the two guys we got, I think they're both more wing-backs than full-backs, and the best stuff that Sessegnon did was in the advanced areas, although he's another one that can't cross the ball. And the one time he did, he crossed it. Pham, I don't know what he was trying to do in the middle to put it in, but he finished up on his backside, and then Hunt smash the ball against him rather than just lifting it a bit and get it in the net.
Yeah.
But anyway, but that's what I would have done today. Lots of people don't like him. I would have brought Taylor Moore in to play right side of a back three. And that meant you could have probably had Wells and Pham pushed forward and we might have retained the ball a bit better in midfield. But he didn't do it. Wells played extra wing again. Which I really, really, really don't like. Although, to be honest, I think the kid tried hard, but he was fairly useless today. So, but he went on, let's be honest, he went on his own.
No. No, Mark, let's get into the action, because not only have we got the action to talk about, but there's the longer term ramifications of this. I mean, as you said, the first 10 minutes, I thought we were looking quite bright, actually. You know, some good movement. Casey Palmer playing well. But on 11, Todd Kane, don't know how many people remember him, 5 games for us in a loan spell back in the promotion season. Too much room for him to cross. Dave Fevs has said on text it was a bloody good cross anyway. But Mark, you talk us through that first goal as you saw it.
Well, Willock, QPR win the ball in the middle, and they support the midfield players supported the attackers straight away. Chris Willock plays it wide to Kane. Sessegnon's advancing on him, but he waves out a leg. Well, Kane just plants it in front of Chair as he runs between Hunt and Mariappa. Now, Chair is 5'2". He's not a big lumbering centre forward. He's not that Scottish player whose name suddenly escapes me that usually plays for them. But he managed to win the ball. The ball was played in front. It was a fantastic cross, but there was no pressure on the ball, and he headed it in the bottom corner.
Do you think he should have even got the cross? I mean, when the ball came across, because I think the camera angles, I have to say, I watch it on Robin's TV ahead of the red button every time now, because you know you get the camera angles and you get the replays. And as is so often the case with us, he had, I know it was a good cross, as Dave Fevers has said, but he had acres of space out on that side and a man in support. Should Sessegnon been tighter on him? Never mind the fact that, you know, it was a good delivery and the shortest man gets on the end of it. But what did you say to Sessegnon?
The answer to that is yes.
Mm. I mean, we were like that all day, weren't we, Ian? We were a yard short and we didn't win the ball.
Yeah.
Mark, we've been like it. We've been like it all season. We don't close down people when they're going to cross the ball. If you stand, what was he, 5 yards away from him? Three, 4 yards? It's too much space. You can't do that with anybody because sooner or later they'll put in a really good cross. And I still say, when the cross comes in, if it's a good cross, fine. Mark the lad. Mark him. But it's no good Mariappa trying to get in front of him and Hunt stood behind him. He's got in between the two of them. So, yes, it was a brilliant cross. But if you stick any average player, and these guys are a lot better than average, you stick any average player in that much space and say, go on, mate, cross it, see what you can do. Sooner or later, he's going to come up with a pearler. And that's exactly what that was.
Yeah, exactly. You give people a chance. But they, I mean, today they had too much energy for us, and we were a yard short in terms of we were so far off. It was untrue. We couldn't get close to their players. They passed the ball around us with ease, and well, you know, you saw the result.
Fevers has said, because I was critical of Sessegnon, who, as I say, other than that, I thought I had a good game and Dave made man of the match. Dave has said that lazy pressing in the centre of the pitch initially, and that's why Sessegnon can't close him down because he's worried about what's going on in front of him. But look, that's the first goal. Ian, the second goal, short corner routine, Pham did a miss kick, didn't he, as well? I mean, take us through that second goal, Ian, because it hit the post as well, didn't it? I can't recall who it was that hit the post despite looking at it two or three times, but
it was a run around corner.
Yeah.
And as I said earlier, that must be 10 or 12 times that routine has done us. Now we've got all these coaches down there, all of whom I'd sack the lot, right? Apart from Pearson, obviously, as the manager. And he hasn't been here very long. How many times have sides done that to us? And they keep doing it. Blackburn did it. The big lad in midfield scored for him. Not Dak, the other fellow who used to play for Norwich. And the name you were looking for, Mark, was Linton Dyke, who we were linked with, the big centre forward.
Yeah, Scottish centre forward. Yeah.
We got so many problems down there. And one of the problems is in why it's going wrong is we're trying to play out from the back and we haven't got anybody that's really good at passing it in the back four, especially not the two fellas in the middle. And they're both terrified of coming more than 10 yards away from the edge of the penalty area because they think they'll get done in behind.
Yeah, which is why we stopped. So it's this fear, and it's the coaching. But let's come on to the coaching in a minute. Let's continue looking at the game. I mean, Ian and Mark, come to you first, Ian. 21st minute substitution, which was clearly tactical. Ian first. Yeah. Why? Why was Backinson that out of touch?
No, I think it was a choice of taking him or possibly Viner off, because he wanted somebody on there that was more likely perhaps to get a goal or get a cross in or do something like that. And I thought Semenyo looked pretty lively when he came on. He didn't actually achieve much, let's be honest.
Yeah.
But neither was anybody else. So I think he made that as an attacking substitution, but he was forced into it.
Yeah.
When we let in two really sloppy goals.
Yeah.
And, you know, if one of their guys beats three players and puts one in the top corner from 30 yards, I'm the first one to say, look, there's not a lot you could do about that.
No.
But that's not the case. I don't think that they were both goal. I mean, you say all goals are preventable, but the second one particularly was incredibly presentable because the guy that shot and hit the post, someone was supposed to be marking him, weren't they?
I know. Yeah.
I saw Backinson. He was holding on to Willock. The guy takes the corner, plays it to Willock, and Backinson's doing exactly what he did with Billing against Bournemouth. He's holding on to the back of him, and I think Willock squirmed free and passed the ball back to the guy that hit the post. And we didn't clear the ball properly, and it goes straight to Dickie, and Dickie's quicker to it and just whacks it up into the roof of the net.
He's quicker to it, and he's a great big cart horse in the middle. So, again,
yeah,
you know,
he's a
poor closing, down. I mean, we did have a momentary respite on the 28th minute when Sess, and again, he played well. Can't fault him there. Got to the byline, did very well to get to the byline. You know, the sort of thing that we've seen even when he's been playing, Jay De Silva do all too infrequently. Got the cross, went across the face of the goal. Nobody touched it. Went to Hunt, and his shot was blocked, I think, by Pham. And then Palmer blasted it over. That was a definite chance, Mark, wasn't it, there, just on the...
Yeah, it was... Davidge was... I thought it hit Davidge, first of all, but Ian was right. The ball squirmed through. I think Jiju missed it, and it came back to Hunt. And you're right, he should have hit it high. And he hit the back of Pham. Pham was on his backside, and he hit his back. And then the ball came back to Palmer, and he whacked it over. I mean, it was like that today when City did get the ball in good positions and they did find space behind. The quality, they were getting dispossessed and the crossing was atrocious. The final ball of the day, it went end of the pitch. That's why they only had one shot on target from Sam Pearson, who put himself around quite well. He couldn't do a lot much, put himself about, found space. But
And then we had, Ian, we had two more players going off injured within the space of 2 minutes, both head injuries. Now, Nash, I don't think it was you that said in a text, but Nash had got hit in the face with a ball from Backinson.
And
he played on for...
Backinson was off.
Semenyo, was it? Oh, I don't matter. Anyway, Nash got hit in the face with a ball.
Sessegnon lashed the ball.
Sessegnon got hit in the face, did it? All right, into Nash's face.
Nash did, you muppet. Sessegnon smashed the ball into Nash's face. That's what happened.
Yeah, that's what I said in the end.
No, you didn't. You talked about Backinson, Semenyo, and everybody else.
Well, it's easy to be confused, isn't it? You know, there's a common denominator.
Well, I'll tell you what, I spent half my life confused in following City, mate. So
anyway,
I'm with you there.
Should the medical team have taken Nash off earlier than what they did? And then obviously Viner got it on Ed as well. So, and that was it.
Well,
that was all our substitutions used up as well, wasn't it? Because you're not allowed to do it anymore.
Yeah, Zach got head. It was a clash of heads.
Clash of heads.
And I think he caught it. He caught the worst of it because he caught it on like by his temple, I think, or by his eye. And apparently when he went off, I didn't see it, but he had a bit of a lump coming up under his eye. So let's hope they're both all right. That's the first thing. The second thing, did it disrupt us? Of course it did. You can't lose three midfield players, albeit one was by choice. And then, you know, say, okay, lads, carry out the game plan because you've completely changed the blooming game plan. It was Pearson's first performance. I thought he looked.
Well, he came on. Yeah, we'll talk about the second half.
He didn't look great. But he looked...
He didn't look any worse than some of the others out there.
No, he didn't.
Really?
No, he didn't. And technically, he seemed a bit better in terms of his first touch and looking for a pass because I can't believe how technically poor a lot of our players are in simple things.
Well, they are, or they look controlling it.
Yeah.
I mean, is it
throw-ins particularly?
Is it, well, is it confidence, though? You know, is it a confidence thing? Because you're absolutely right. I mean, we just look like the ball is a bloody hot potato. But let's get back to the substitutions, those two that took place. Was it Henri? Now, is it? Is it Henri Lansbury or Henry Lansbury? Let's put this one to bed.
Well, it's spelled Henri, but I think he pronounces it Henry.
Does he? Right. Well,
yeah, it's spelled with an I.
Give a how he wants to pronounce his own name. But there we go. He came up. What? And then was it? Who was the young kiddie that came on? Was it
Pearson? Lansbury came on for Nash, and Pearson came on for Viner.
Who didn't? Where does that leave Massengo? You know,
on sat on his backside.
Is he out of favour?
I'd say he's more than out of favour. If I'd have been Massengo, do you know what I'd have done? Half time, I got changed, got my car, and went out.
Back out to Noel.
I don't know where he lives, but. I'd have gone because the kid can't be happy down there. He's not getting a fair crack of the whip. We tried to turn him into RoboCop. And if you look at the player we had initially and the player we've got now, that's another reason I'd get rid of the coaches. Kid needs to go somewhere where he's going to get proper coaching in place in football.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right there. I mean, let's look at the second half. It is very brief. The young lad had a shot saved, 67 minutes. Hunt put the ball in quite intelligently. Palmer did a nice little step over. Ian and Mark, Naki Wells should put that one in from 5 yards, shouldn't he? Right on the edge of the box. And they're trying to say it had a little bobble.
It was a great move from Casey Palmer down the left. He played the ball in, Pham went for it, and it bobbled back to Wells. And he just needs to keep it down. And it's 2-1 and the game's back on, although we haven't played well. I mean, he had one in the first half where he didn't get it on target as well. And I think he got a free kick from Lansbury in the first half where he miscontrolled it. And there was when we got touches in their penalty area today, they were poor, poor touches. We were easily dispossessed. That's why we only had one shot on target from distance today, because we were so poor.
Yeah, no, it's not good.
No question.
I mean, what summed up City's ineptitude to me was on the 78th minute when the Moroccan chair, the goal scorer, he picked up the ball just outside his penalty area and he went on a run, right? He went past certainly two of our players, if not three, and then Henri chops him down just on the edge of the box, yeah? And then Johansson put it well over the top, but... That sums City up, really, didn't it? Lightweight in midfield. And then, as somebody said, I think the commentator said, Chris Martin, not the worst, certainly not the best either. But somebody should have taken one for the team and not let him go through as long as he did. Do you recall that incident, Ian?
Yeah, I do. I don't think he was on the edge of his own penalty area. I think he was in our half. But I agree with you on the run. If you're going to trip a bloke up, don't wait until he's on the edge of the box. Trip him up 20 yards away from goal, because then it's not an issue. But I think it demonstrates how weak we looked physically and mentally. We don't look like a team with character or strength.
No.
Now, in fairness, people will say, well, hang on, how about Swansea? How about Middlesbrough? I mean, it could be that. I mean, every side's got a bogey ground, and unfortunately for us, it's Ashton Gate.
Yeah, it's our own bloody pitch. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I mean, we haven't looked, let's be honest, forget Dean Holden and all the rest of it. We haven't looked good at home for probably three seasons.
But we were saying that 6 months ago. We were saying we're into year four of not looking good now.
Yeah, we won 11 games in 2017-18, and we've won 8 games the last two seasons at home. We've only won 7 so far.
Yeah.
Yes. And so that it's awful. That alludes to the point that something's wrong. So, as I've said a lot of times, Lee Johnson should have gone at least a year before he did, if not two. And Dean Holden should have never got the job. And this is the what's causing the problem now was that debacle in the summer. That's what's causing the problem now. It hasn't caused all the injuries. I don't know what's going on there. I honestly don't. And it's all right people saying, well, look at these blokes coming back and playing for the under-23s next week.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So they go back, they play for the under 20. Then what? How long before they can play?
Yeah.
You know, is it the end of the month?
Well, at least we haven't at least we've got a free week during this week, and you know, we've got enough players that we could give some of those players, if they play for the under 23 and come through unscathed, if we get the substitute timings right, we got enough that we could give some of those players a second half or a last 20 minutes just to, quote, get them on the grass. I mean, Dave's put on here, epitome is his favourite word at the moment. Too many players are the epitome of the LJMA Mark Ashton era. Nice boys, yeah. They need an effing good shake. I agree with that. And PBG, who's been commenting on here today, he said the players, because they've been getting off scot-free most of the time, did they con Johnson? Did they con Holden? They're not going to get away with it conning Pearson, are they? Or are they?
No, they'll be out the door because, I mean, you know, you look at Backinson today, taken off early because he won't perform. He's not afraid to make tough decisions, and I think you'll see that when we'll have a huge turnover of players. Football. There's no sentiment in football. Don't perform, you should be out the door. The last two managers too sentimental, and from the ball
nice
as well.
Giving mentally too nice players.
Mentally yeah, what I call us is we're a mamby pamby club. The whole club is mamby-pamby, apart from the fans. And the fans are more mamby-pamby than they've ever been because, you know, if you had fans in the ground and that was going on, now I'll go back, same as you, Dave, 20, 30 years, they'd have been bricks going through windows and cars getting vandalised. Now, I'm not for a second, before anybody said, oh, you can't do that. No, I'm not suggesting it, but that's what would have happened. It was a rough old place. And I don't want clubs to come down here and enjoy the day. And I don't want the fans to come down here and enjoy the day. And once again, let me make it very, very clear. I'm not suggesting anybody kicks their heads in. What I'm saying is we're a mamby-pamby, soft-touch club. The same as what was Millwall's manager, Gary Rowett. He said that. All I said was, go down to Bristol, get stuck into them, and they won't want to know it.
And we're still playing that.
And Warnock did the same. So we got too many nice people, and we've got to stop it. I want to see the opposition team limp onto the field at the start of the game. That's what I want to see. I want to see us. I want people to go, oh, you know, like years ago, I don't know if you've ever read a book by a bloke called Eamon Dunphy about Millwall. And he said, we didn't have to do that much because after teams that came down the den were terrified and they were frightened to death, and all they wanted to do was play the game, lose, get on the coach and go home.
Go home. And they had players, if you can remember back then, remember Terry Hurlock that used to play for them?
Yeah, this was after that.
And if you go back to a more recent era, when Cardiff, we're talking about the Danny Wilson era when they beat us in the playoff final. He was, remember that player that they used to have, Graham Kavanagh, the silver-haired guy in midfield? Hard bastard, get stuck in. Bloody good footballer as well. And as PBG has said, this is the legacy of Johnson and Ashton's recruitment. That's the long and the short of it. Clubs in the bag, namby-pamby, we're weak, mentally weak.
You look at two of the three yellow cards they got today. They would take one for the team, yellow cards, QPR, because the fouls were like 20 yards from goal when, you know, City were threatening, but they weren't going to let the players go through. You know, we weren't prepared to do that. We know, with a foul from Lansbury on Chair, we're too soft. The only reason we stayed in the first division all those years ago for four seasons, because we were a tough team. Yeah. You know, we roughed up teams. We were very professional. Now, you wouldn't be able to get away with some of the challenges that we did then. Of course, the game's moved on, but we're not tough. We're not uncompromising within the laws of the game. We don't do that to teams.
Well, the long and the short of it is, teams are much more professional than we are. If you said that the opening four games that we'd have averaged 1.5 points a game, that's 6 points less, we would well and truly be down in amongst the relegation battle at the moment. And there are some rubbish sides in there, so maybe even with that early start, and it's fact, we had that early start, so we can't make adjustments like that. But as Mark Carter pointed out earlier on one of the threads. Wickham, only Wickham have lost more games than we've lost, and only Huddersfield and Wickham have let more in. Yeah, and if we hadn't been as decisive in winning the games, because if you look at that, you know, we won 8, drawn 14, lost none. That's a bizarre sequence. When was the last time, never mind losing 5 games in a row for the first time in their history, City, when was the last time we went 22 games without a draw? Yeah, so we're lucky that we got those 8 wins. Yeah, because if you look at that normal distribution over there, you could take, you know, those 14 defeats. Well, I suppose that would have given us a few more points. But it's just, it doesn't seem to get any better. And I've listened to a couple of Pearson's interviews now, and he appears to be coming across very sage-like. He's standing there pontificating and what have you. And as Frank has said on one of the text messages here, have we got a contingency plan if Nigel Pearson decides this isn't for him? Because looking at it today, you know, and the players that are out of contract, and we come on to out of contract players in a minute, looking at it today, it was a shit show in every area, wasn't it? So have we got a contingency plan if he says he's not interested? And at what point, guys, do we say is a 3-year contract? Because that's what it needs. When do we say that?
Okay, well, is there a contingency plan? No, there won't be. There wasn't a contingency plan with Holden. We thought we'd just see how it went, and it didn't go that well, did it?
Yeah.
It needs, for me, it needs a complete clear out from top to bottom, and I mean top to bottom. I think the recruitment manager, head of recruitment's got to go. Ashton's got to go. The fitness and conditioning fella's got to go.
And we've got
to start again.
Yeah.
And I know that that's difficult to say. And Steve, you know, it's the only thing that frustrates me with Steve Lansing. He said, well, you know, we don't want to throw away all the good stuff. What good stuff?
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
we don't want to ruin what we've done. And I'm thinking, well, what's that then?
What have you done? What have you done? I mean,
spent a lot of money on bang average players that, you know, do not join together as a bloody jigsaw. I mean, how can they have signed Henri Lansbury? What was the rationale in signing him?
It's Henry Lansbury, because I don't want to get accused of calling him Henri.
All right, I'm just calling him whatever.
Yeah, but why sign a right-sided midfield player when you needed a left-back? That's my criticism. Whether he's a great player, an awful player, or whatever, you don't. If the money was there to pay his wages, then the money would have been there to sign
a left back.
Yeah, and that's what we needed. Now that way, you could move Sessegnon over to the right, or you know, play a slightly different formation with Sessegnon perhaps further forward, because he seems better going forward than he does defending, to me. And he, once again, he ain't the biggest.
No.
And I think there's so many things that at the moment, but when I hear Pearson talk about the players, I won't do it tonight, but I will, by the next time we do a podcast, I'm working on the Nigel Pearson impression, because he's, you know, like every time Holden spoke, it was as I say, and he's got a few inflections like that, because they'll ask him a question. He'll ask him a question and he'll go, yeah. Well, and everything he says is slightly northern, completely reasonable, but very measured and delivered slowly.
You're repeating what I said a minute ago. It's a very deliberate, thoughtful, sage-like thing. And I'm standing there thinking, when is he going to say what needs to be said? You know, because he could just as well, for the amount of good they are, and you said about the coaches, just say to, you know, I saw him, interestingly, before the game, chatting to Cisse, right? But he could just say to the two Muppets that are there at the moment, look, guys, you go now, yeah?
Well, he can't do that, David, really, can he? Because, you know, they're I don't know what sort of contract they're on, but we've got to see out the season. He's not going to, they can't go now. We wouldn't be able to bring anybody else in. Who's he going to bring in unless there's a contingency plan? I just don't think that's possible.
So do you think we're just going to, at what point do we say, well, he's had him on a training ground for 2 weeks, 3 weeks. At what point do we say he can't get a tune out of this bunch of players? He can't get a tune out of them because he's had a week on the training ground. He's got a full week this week coming up. And this isn't a criticism of him at all, right? But, you know, are we going to see this little mini season that we've got of 12 games? Yeah. What's he going to do? Should he? I'll ask you this one, Ian, because Dave's been banging on about it on the text. Should Pham be in a starting 11 anymore? Because he's not going to be here. Well, Dave's been saying lazy, only thinks about himself. You know, should any of the out of contract players be in? Because, you know,
they have to, unless you're going to put the under 21s out, they have to. And a lot, don't forget, I mean, when people were doing backflips about, oh, look who's back on, who's going to play for the under 23s, three of those are out of contract in 8 weeks' time.
Yeah.
And when he'll start doing things is in 8 weeks' time when the season's over.
Yeah.
And I'm just hoping, I said the other night, and a couple of people laughed, I just want six more points, get us to 51, and then we'll be safe. Right?
Yeah.
And that's what I want. And that's all I'm expecting from the next, well, what I was expecting from 36. And I was hoping to win today. But if we can pick up six more points, get to 51, and then we get to the end of the season, like I say, which is 8 weeks from next Saturday, that's it. We'll have played the 11 games by then.
Mm.
And then Pearson, you can sit down and say to Pearson, look, Nige, you've had a look at it. Firstly, do you want the job? And you'd hope it was decided before then. Do you want the job full time? And this is the contract. And what do we need to do? And he might look round and say, well, we need how many senior players in the squad? If you take out the 13, I think I worked out we're left with about 12.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not including the younger lads like Semenyo, Backinson in that. Owora Edwards, OP Edwards, I'm not including any of them. They're in the under 23s. Senior players, I think we're left with about 12, and apart from goalkeeper, we need to strengthen every position.
We do.
So
we do. Goalkeeper is the only way we can raise cash and maybe get rid. Somebody comes in and buys Bentley, although if they saw the game the other night, that probably took a couple of million off his value. But that's the only way we can generate some transfer activities by selling our biggest saleable asset, our most valuable saleable asset, which is a goalkeeper.
And you wouldn't put it past City to do it.
No.
Or should I say
Ian, go on, finish what you're saying. Go on.
Well, and Steve makes the financial decision, but if you're him and you own the club and we're going to have a loss this year of, let's not be too
30 million
excitable, somewhere between 20 and 30 million will be our loss. So it's hardly surprising if someone comes in and says, I mean, if you look at the lad, I always liken it to Ramsdale at Sheffield United. I think they paid 15 million to Bournemouth for him. I would say, I think Bentley's every bit as good as him. Although at the moment, the panic in the defence is spreading to Bentley.
Yeah.
Because he must be thinking, oh my God, what's going on in front of me? You know, it's already saying, well, I'm going to look good making a few saves, but you don't want the ball getting smashed past you in the back of the net. So I'd like to, you know, but Pearson will have to say, well, this is what I need. This is what I'm going to need to do. And it's not, Steve, honestly, mate, it's not a bit of tinkering around the edges. I'm going to need to get excitable here, and I want to bring in. Here's the blokes I want to bring in. There ain't anybody under 6 foot.
All right, but Ian, hang on, you're missing one
thing.
And
they all look like they'd eat their grandmother.
Yeah, there's one thing you're missing here, Ian, because that conversation, you're saying he's having that with Steve, that there's Mark Ashton there, and he's going to be saying, you know, is Mark Ashton going to be in agreement with what Pearson says? Because he's really dismantling.
Yeah.
Is he?
I would. Yeah, I would think so. In terms of the players, I mean, if you remember, Mark Ashton always said, and I've confirmed this in conversations with direct conversations with Lee Johnson and Dean Holden, they get final say on incomings. All right, so you're not going to have the, you know, how it was rumored that Steve Lansdowne signed David James and Coppell didn't know anything about it, et cetera, et cetera. That ain't going to happen.
Yeah.
All right. Now, Pearson's not stupid. He's not going to go and say, well, I'll tell you what, I want Ronaldo and then I want you to go to Man City and get me Phil Foden. He's not daft.
No.
But he knows his way around and you say, right, what do I need? Right, I need some big, heavy, thick set blokes. I've got some blokes here who can play a bit. And don't forget, we'll have, hopefully, Liam Walsh have signed. I don't... Yeah. I'm 50-50 on that. Joe Williams will still be here. So you've got two in what would have been most people's first-choice midfield at the start of the season.
Yeah.
So you might think, right, I want a thug. I want a Terrier lock to come in midfield and gaffer it. The first bloke I'd sign, I've got to be honest, is Ben Tozer at Cheltenham, because he can throw the ball from Ashton Gate to Cheltenham.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, big long throws. People, oh, I don't want to play like that. Well, I do because I want to win games.
Yeah.
And then get him and a Baker clone, but one that's not injured all the time. It's like 6'3", and play 3-5-2, but with three monsters there that look like they'd eat their grandmothers to get a point. I mean, I want us to be a real nasty side. And that's what we need to do. And I think
Nigel Pearson is the sort of bloke that can see it like that. I mean, Mark, you've been sat there in the background listening. I mean, there is a rebuilding job to do. And nobody on here, none of the three of us are criticising Pearson at all. We're just saying the task that is in front of him is getting more immense with more performances like this, and if they continue to the end of the season. And realistically, Mark, do you think next season has got to be a season of consolidation? Because even if Pearson stays on, which we hope he does, right, he's got to mould a side. And is next season going to be one where Pearson can get us to the playoffs at the first time of asking? Or is the situation so bad?
Not necessarily. I think that Pearson's obviously given his point of view already to Lansdowne and Ashton and telling him what needs to be done for next season and who needs to be retained and who doesn't, you know, not for common knowledge, obviously. And I think he wants to stay. I mean, I listened to him briefly on Five Live Social last night, and you know, he thinks, you know, City are a great club. I know they're platitudes, but I think he wants to stay. But you'll tell the you'll tell Ashton and Lansdowne about the mammoth job that's ahead. I expect him to get this, you know, the 6 points that we need, and hopefully sign a contract in the next few weeks. I was on Radio Bristol after Ian the other night, and I don't think I was quite kind, thinking I just thought we lost that fragility, and I was wrong. What scares me is the fact that, you know, as soon as QPR put the pressure on today, we just completely wilted.
We were. No, and we were all over the place, really, overrunning midfield.
That frightened me. I mean, so we need some generals in there. We haven't got that. I mean, we could like Callas sit the back, but there isn't anybody like that throughout.
Well, and you could argue that's what we thought when we were signing Chris Brunt, that somebody who had a bit of steel in there, but clearly his legs.
Even Lansbury.
No, Lansbury is not. Yeah,
he's not a defensive midfielder.
When we signed Gary O'Neill. Yeah, look at when we signed Gary O'Neill. I thought, right, here's a player that's got promoted out of this division with three players, and he was a sick note for the 2 years that he was here. It was awful. Now, PBG said on here, Pearson could have a blank sheet of paper, basically. A lot of building could be done without of contract players, right? We, to you two guys, I sent out that thread on OTIB where I'm looking at it now as we're talking. Here we go. It was put up on OTIB by Carey Six. And this is all the players that are out of contract. Championship players are out of contract in the summer. And he said, if you could have any five on the list, who are you taking? Now, we've said on FBC, Forever Bristol City podcast, we've said that we're going to have the pick of players they're out of contract in the summer. When you look through that list, I'm not going to read them all out, but Kerry Six went with Nyambi, the fullback. I think McIntyre, Mpanzo, Mawat, who I think is a very good player, and Ojo. But the rest of the players that are out of contract in the summer, let's just pick. Well, there's only three right backs, which is Rankin Costello at Blackburn, Carl Norton at Swansea, 32, Andre Wisdom Derby, 27. Nyambi, there's more. There's Jack Hunt. Yeah, we know him, don't we? Billy Jones, age 33 at Rotherham. Adam Smith, age 29. You go into left backs, Greg Cunningham, age 30. You know, Joe Bennett, age 30 at Cardiff. I'm looking at players and thinking, well, are any of them any better than what we've got? And the answer is not really. There's probably only about six or seven players in there that are half decent, and other players are going to be looking at them as well. And you said to me earlier today, you said Preston, they had five out of contract. In the window, they've sold three and signed two. Have we caught this up beyond all FUBAR, as they say, effed up beyond all recognition, our management of player contracts? You know, are we more in the shit than we think we are?
Well, to be honest, we don't know. If it's not a deliberate strategy, and one would hope it is, you know, with Mr. DNA doing it and with Mr. Lansdowne's agreement, they could be betting the farm on all of the players that are out of contract staying but have in their wages. Now, that doesn't compute when FAM's been offered what was described as one of the biggest contracts in the history
ever
of the
offered
club.
To That's a player. More, yeah, yeah,
yeah. So it doesn't seem like that. Now, Mark Ashton said no one else had signed another contract. So, assuming that they're all fit, you've got to think, why are we doing it? Why are we letting all these contracts? There's 14, 15 million pounds. Now, that's what we've paid. It's not necessarily what they're worth now. But if I said to you, we're signing a proven championship striker, you'd expect to be paying somewhere between 5 and 10 million quid for a bloke who's going to score 16 goals a season. You know, now, it may be that we let FAM go and we go and get Assombalonga. But Assombalonga, but I think Borough signed him when they ride are just coming down from the Premiership or whatever. But he's on big money. Now,
If you look at the forwards, I will read out the names of some of these, because you've got Sonny Aluko, Reading, 32, Kachunga, 28, Sheffield Wednesday now, Sonogo, 28, Huddersfield. They don't inspire, do they? Adebayo Akinfenwa, 38. Famara Diju, 28. Martin Waghorn, 31. Danny Hilton, don't know him. Lewis Malt, Ched Evans, 32. Ashley Fletcher, 25, Middlesbrough. Yep. Britta Sombalonga, age 28, Middlesbrough. Andre Ayew, 31, Swansea. Troy Deeney, 32. Matt Smith, 31. Fraser Campbell, 33. Glenn Murray, 37. Good old Sammy Baldock, 31. Jordan Rhodes, 31. They're all players there. And Mark, these players are out of contract now for a reason, aren't they? There's a suggestion that maybe the clubs that they're at, they ain't going to offer them because they might have done it by now. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. And yeah, they don't inspire a huge amount of confidence. I mean, in a post COVID world or a COVID world, I think players are not going to get the same deals that they were on. No way. And of course, you know, teams that come down into the Championship will have a clause in their contract where they'll have an automatic wage reduction. But I think
if they got a good agent, that what they will have is a buyout clause, so they'll be able to get out. But not necessarily. There's not a lot of people going to sign up for a wage reduction. They'll do it the other way. Like we used to do it, you know, when Gary Johnson said personally to me one day, yeah, you got to realise we've got these boys, they know what they're going to earn if they go up in the Premier League. That, you know, we've already done the deal. I said, that's fantastic, providing they're good enough to play at that level. If they're not good enough to play at that level, you've got you've got a Championship player on Premier League wages, and you won't be able to shift him, will you? And it it transpired. I know we didn't go up, but we had blokes like Lewin Nyatanga, and when he moved to Peterborough, I mean, Darren McCanty said, but couldn't believe what he was earning at Bristol City.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think we've really good.
Lisa said on here, sorry, Mark, she said there'll be loads of players available in the summer from other Championship clubs. Also, look at the Prem, they'll be leasing players and the young players at Prem clubs. They won't be able to afford to debug squads, so we'll drop down to our level. Well, no, there won't be loads of available in the summer because if you're under contract, right, you're not available. And if you are in a contract, you're going to have to, you're only going to sell that player if a club offers you money. We're not going to have any money to spend on transfers and wages, are we, chaps? Yes?
I don't know. Lansdowne said that there is some freedom, didn't he, when he did the interview the other week on TalkSport with FFP. Make of that what you will. But obviously, with the huge losses in revenue because of having no fans in the stadium, then it's going to make it very tight. I'd imagine it's going to be free transfers and very small fees, if any. Who that'll get you, I don't know.
We've just been through the list, and there's not a great deal there, is there?
Unless you get players from abroad. I don't know how difficult that is now post Brexit. So it's going to be an interesting summer. I mean, those players are on the list. They're on the list for a reason, you know. And people like Aluko, 32 years old, bit player at Reading. A lot of those players, they're not going to get the same deal that they're on in their existing clubs, do they? Do they say, if they'll be offered reduced terms, some of them by their club, and do they take that, or do I take the chance to go elsewhere? And you know, when I might be out of work for months.
But you see, there's the other thing. You know, let's take Britta Sombalonga as an example. Let's say at Middlesbrough.
He's not even a starter now, is he?
He's on a contract. Player. Ian, what do you think Sombalonga's on? I know we're guessing, but what, 25 grand a week? Sombalonga?
More than that.
Well, they bought him for 15 million, so I wouldn't be surprised if he's 35.
All right, so he's on 35 grand a week, right? And he's not playing well enough to get in the starting lineup. So he's out of contract, right? And then Bristol City or another Championship club says, we'll give you a 3-year contract, Brett. But actually, it's at 13.5 grand a week. Knowing what the mentality of some of these players is, it's like you, if you were paid 100 grand a year for doing a job for X number of years and then you got made redundant and then the same job was available down the road at 50 grand, you're going to do it because you want the money, but are you really going to bust your ass for half the money? And that mindset, and is that why some of our out of contract players aren't exactly busting our asses, which is getting back to a point that Fevs was making about Dijou, you know, saying that he's very selfish, he's only thinking about himself. What do you think to that, Ian?
I think most footballers only do think about themselves, you know, and I think, well, let's not call it footballers, let's say most people. A lot of people think about themselves, but I mean, if you look at parachute payments, that is going to help clubs. I mean, when you think they've come down, and don't forget, you finish bottom of the Premier League, you get approximately £100 million. So Sheffield United will be coming down with £100 million. Then they'll come along and say, first-year parachute payment, there's your £40 million. And next season, you're going to get £35 million. And in the third year, you're going to get £15 million. So they've got about £140 million, take away £7 million. They've got about £130 million more than us before a ball's kick, before a ticket sold, anything.
Yeah.
So they will be able to go out and get better players than we will. And so will the clubs that go up, and so will the other clubs that come down. And at the moment, I mean, Sheffield United and West Brom look dead and buried. Fulham might pull out of it unless Newcastle and Brighton put on a bit of a spurt and pick up some points. So those clubs coming down are going to be a real competitive advantage. Plus, you've already got sides that are in the Championship that are still getting parachute payments.
Yeah, yeah.
So we're not in a great place. We're in a great place in the sense that we've got Steve Lansdowne, who's very wealthy, but we're not in a great place compared to them in terms of income
And as Fevs has pointed out on here to Red, because people are saying, oh, other clubs are in the shit. So you've got those clubs in the shit. Well, sorry, you've got those clubs, as you've been saying, in with parachute payments that are either current or going on for another couple of years. And as Fevs has said on here in reply to somebody who said, oh, we're better positioned, the likes of Barnsley, Brentford, Millwall, Preston and Blackburn, who are all going to be in the division, have a cost base that is way, way lower than ours. Yeah. Brentford, yeah, yeah, slightly yeah, more in line. So
well,
those teams
won't, particularly, they pay
those
peanuts.
Teams,
I mean,
those teams won't be
that.
Going, but those teams, they won't be going bust. So we've almost got the worst of both worlds, really. We've got a high cost base, hence us losing 30 million quid. I mean, how much of those aforementioned clubs, Barnsley, ignore Brentford, Barnsley, Millwall, Preston, Blackburn, how much are they going to lose this year? Yeah, we don't know.
Well,
we don't know.
They might not lose as much as us, Dave, if their cost base is lower. That's the point that Dave Fevs is making. If you've got an unsustainable cost base, and we have, and it might be the way Steve Lansdowne looks at it, is like a lot of companies that I go into, and you have to say, well, look, we need to get rid of some people. And it's a shame and all the rest of it. And guess what? I'm not going to start with the cleaners. So if you've got, you know, you've got Mark Ashton, John Lansdowne on the board, Doug Armand or whatever, they might say to John Lansdowne, well, you're going to have to go and put a shift in because these two blokes are going. So you'll have to do it all. You can hang on to Mark Kelly because he runs a stadium and that is...
Yeah, and you've got your finance director. You've got a good finance director there.
The stadium is sustainable on its own. So you need an MD to run that and organise the pop concerts and all this kind of stuff. So that could stay. But then you've got to look at it and say, right, you've got all these coaches. You've got to get rid of half of them. That's what other businesses do. And say to Nigel Pearson, right, you can have one boot. You can have an assistant. Who do you want? Because all these guys are going. And I keep seeing all these people. I've gone on about it on the bench. Piles of them. You know,
no, but we said Pat that. Mountain, we said that. Pat Mountain, Khalifa Cisse, Downing, Simpson. You know, no, but it's been allowed to get like that. And if you're Steve Lansdowne, you've really, at the earliest possible moment, maybe the weekend of the international break, you've got to get Pearson and Mr. Ashton in a room together, and you've got to say, look, come up with your plan now, or I'd be saying to them this week, you got a free week, what do you want to do? Nigel, we're going to keep you on. We'd like you to stay. This is the deal. Yeah. Actually, Mark, we want you to take a 25% pay cut.
Oh,
not
thanks very much.
Yeah. Right. Still 400 grand. No, but if you're the owner, and it gets back to the contingency. What if Nigel Pearson decides that he doesn't want to do it? I don't think that's likely. But, you know, what right now, Ian, they should be having discussions lined up for that sort of conversation. And the question should already be asked, shouldn't it? You know, six games to go, which is going to be, right, what's the plan for next season? Crowds are going to be back, touch wood, yeah? Right, but we're going to get half the number of season ticket holders because people won't part up with 500 quid for 350 quid in the knowledge that maybe the season, if there was a third wave of COVID, the season would be, we'd be shut out grounds in the winter. These conversations have to be being had. And I would have thought by now that the chief executive would be making noises that these conversations are happening, because we've heard nothing from our chairman. The only person that's spoken is the owner and the temporary temporary most senior other person in the company. So I think it's worrying. What do you guys say?
I think the conversations are going on now, but they won't make us party into what's going on until he signs on the dotted line. But I would imagine that he's probably made his feelings clear about what you'll need. He's got to be allowed to manage because he is quite unique and he's got a certain style. But unless he's allowed to get on with the job and do it his way, he won't stay down there. He'll tell the club what he needs, and unless they adhere to that, I don't think he'll stay. And he won't make ridiculous. I don't think he'll make ridiculous requests. He knows what the. I'm sure Lansdowne already told him what's available, and that he's talked to Ashton. There's some relationship there, and we just need to be safe. There's some good raw talent there, but there's going to be a huge turnover. But I expect him to stay, but he need to sign sooner or later.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, what's his record like, Ian? And Dave would probably know this, but he's gone for supper. What's Pearson's record like in bringing on younger players?
Well, I honest answer is, Dave, I don't know.
You don't know.
I mean, I know he had success at Leicester. And he's had some good times and some bad times at other clubs, like most managers. I mean, if you look around and say, well, we don't want a manager that's been sacked, you'd never employ one. So, you know, on what I've seen of Pearson so far, like you say, he's a bit slow and a bit considered about what he's saying, and I don't blame him. I didn't agree with a lot of what he said about the Bournemouth game, that there were good bits in there. I thought we were good for about, or decent, I'll say, for about 25 minutes in the first half.
Yeah.
And apart from that, I thought we just went into a low block and, you know, you had Wales playing extra left wing. And it just, I don't want to see that. And that, but that's where our defence is comfortable. Low block, 10 yards outside the box in a 4-5-1 or a 5-4-1. That's how they are. And I don't want to, I mean, one thing about the first 10 minutes today is at least we got in their half and put them under some pressure. But then we just, for whatever reason, whether it was them or us or a combination of both, we stopped doing it.
Yeah.
And we did, but we didn't, you know, and it was the same. If you look at the games we won, we could have been 4-0 down half time at Swansea.
Oh, yeah.
And we played well for 25 minutes of the first half at Borough. But that's what we did. We didn't dominate the game. And, you know, because most of the time, the second half against Borough, we were sat in our penalty area, letting them ping crosses in.
You're right.
And it's only a lack of quality. If that was QPR, they'd have probably scored a couple of goals.
Yeah.
So, you know, let's be real about what we've got. I mean, my concern for ages has been two things, contracts and injuries. And I haven't heard a definitive answer on any of those.
No.
Not at all. So who knows what's going to happen?
Yeah. I mean, let's look at this. Let's look at the starting lineup today, right? And then we make this the final topic today. Benson goal, we'd want to keep him, right? If you look at the back four, because we lined up as a 4-4-2 today. As a back four.
4-1-4-1, I think.
All right. But as a back four today, Hunt, Callas, Mariappa, Sess. Callas is the only one there of that lot that is under contract, and we'd probably want to keep him anyway. Is there anybody else left who's in contract that could fill either of those positions? I guess you'd say Jada Silva if he could keep fit, right? But so straight away we need a right back and another centre back. We agree with that.
Well, yeah. Taylor Moore's.
Yeah, but he's not a squad player. Yeah, but he's not.
He's,
there,
he's inconsistent.
So that's it, right? No, if you look at the midfield,
no such thing, in my opinion. Squad player.
What?
No, if you've got players down there in the first team squad, and you look at them and think, oh God, no, he can't play for the first team. We don't want him.
No,
we want competition, Dave. That's
all right.
The problem. I mean, I've got a list of what our squad would be for next season of in contract players, right?
Yeah.
And what we've got, I'll tell you now. I won't go through it.
Go on quickly, run through the names.
I'll do it quickly. You've got three goalkeepers, no right backs, two left backs, stroke left wing backs, three right centre backs, no left centre backs. You've got two central midfield players, one attacking midfield wing, one number 10, one centre forward, that's Chris Martin, two strikers. Now, that's all you've got. That's 15 senior players, apart from the likes of Semenyo, Backinson. So,
Well, no, what I was going to say was as a list of the names, well, you could pick it through. But if you,
10 to 13, okay, 13 players.
Four midfield players that started today, Viner, Naj, Backinson and Palmer, they are all here next season. So that could be a midfield four for next season. Yeah? And you'd look at that on paper, if you'd have said, because the only one who's missing is Liam Walsh. We don't know what he's like on paper. Right, but if you looked at that back four that's there, you'd think that's not bad on paper. When you think what they're capable of as individuals, not
as a midfield, Dave. No, I think it's a terrible midfield. That's right. The sort of midfield get you relegated.
All right, who? Okay, I mean, who would you? Is there anybody who's injured at the moment that would displace any of that four? All right, because I'm just looking.
Williams and Walsh.
Walsh. All right. So Williams would come in for Backinson or Naj? So if you say Williams and Walsh are the two that allegedly Holton was going to build it round, who would be the four then? Because we haven't got to go out. Okay, Walsh is out of contract. But who would be the four if we say we're going to play with four midfielders?
Well, it depends what shape you play, Dave, doesn't it? It depends if you play a 4-2-3-1.
That's where it starts getting a bit complicated.
Yeah, it does. But what you want to do is look at your squad. If at the start of this season, I looked at our squad and I thought, okay, two centre forwards, Zizou and Chris Martin. All right. Three strikers, Andreas Weimer, Naki Wells. Yeah. And perhaps Antoine Semenyo. And you say, oh, that's not bad. That's not bad. If they get some service, you've got two blokes there who are at least 15 goal a season strikers in the championship. You've got Weimann who probably get 8 to 10.
Yeah.
Chris Martin would probably be the same. So you're thinking, well, that's not bad.
No.
There's lots of people worse off. In terms of a midfield, I think you really do need to say to Nigel Pearson, look, what do you want to do? I want to sign these 12 players and this is how they're going to line up in a 3-5-2, 4-3-3, whatever you want to do.
Yeah.
Just show us how they're going to line up. And then you show me your reserve 11 for playing in those positions so that if we play somebody in our division, and let's say Joe Williams can slot in.
Exactly.
So Joe gets a knock, who comes in? And if I was sat down with a manager and he couldn't tell me that, I wouldn't let him go out and sign.
Oh, well, there you go. And that comes back then to the players. Transfers and recruitment and everything else like that. Guys, I said I'd want to finish before 7 o'clock today. We got a week off. Thank goodness, because it feels like Groundhog Day every day that we sit down and go through it. There's so much going on off the field that we're going to stumble our way to the end of the season. We're on 45 points now with 11 games left. If we get a point a game, 56, my optimism's gone a bit. We'll have done well. We want Pearson to stay. Of that, there is no doubt. He is the man. It's up to now Mr. Lansdowne to show some cojones and back his manager and the manager and the chief exec to come up with a plan. And that means, wholesale changes on the coaching side, as you said, Ian, on the medical side and everything like that. Because, as Lisa's just said, next season could be make or break for us, depending on who is the manager and what players that we bring in. There's still people putting messages in. PBD has said, players won't come in and sit on the bench. If he doesn't like some of the players that are in contract, Masengo clearly being one of those, are we going to be able to shift those out? Is that going to be more assets that are going to be written off? It is a mess. And Ali's said on here, and we've been saying, how long have we been saying this? We lack true identity. We can muddle through, but rarely, if ever, stamp our authority in other teams. Today is what Swansea would have done if they had taken the early chances. It's all about other teams capitalising.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And us sneaking wins. So most of those games that we've won, I think what we're saying, I'll say at least half of those games that we've won, we could quite easily lost. You know, we've not put in 90-minute performances.
I think the only game that I remember we put in a 90-minute performance, I don't know if you agree with me, is Stoke away. That's the only one that I can remember. But I think the club needs and the fans need some certainty. So the sooner we're safe and the sooner Nigel Pearson signed a contract, I think that would give the old club a lift. It's not going to make a huge amount of difference on the pitch, but it'll give the club a lift and some of the players. It's give some certainty so we know that he's going to have more control next season and that, you know, hopefully he'll be able to attract some good players.
And I think we're starting to see a rejuvenated Casey Palmer as well, that if he can...
Cause there's some good things there.
He's done more good things than he's done bad things. Final word from you, Ian. I mean, what should they be doing? What should they be doing at Phelan Towers this week in the new wonderful, wonderful training ground? What should we be doing?
The first thing they do is plot how we get safe.
Yep.
Do that, and then they've got to sit down with Nigel Pearson and say, right, mate, you know, you've had a reasonable look at it. Leave the kids aside in the academy, and you tell us what you need. And that could be 6-7 players. It could be, I think we need somewhere between 8 and 12. And that's the honest truth, because I think a lot of the ones that are under contract probably wouldn't be good enough to get it to consistently stay in the top six.
Yeah.
So I think you've got to look at players who have ongoing injury problems. I mean, Jay De Silva is a player I like, but he's had the same injury now for 2 seasons.
Yeah.
So, is it stress fracture?
Stress fracture.
Yes. Same injury, same leg. So has he got an ongoing problem? Bearing in, you know, and I'm not talking about money. I'm talking about, you know, the kid. Is he going to play the prerequisite number of games? Do you hang on to Tommy Rowe? Or do you say, well, if we do that, that stops the likes of George Nurse, Cameron Pring, Barney Sodhi, Vince Harper coming through. So, but Nigel Pearson might say, well, no, one of the best defences we had in terms of a defensive record was when we played 4 centre halves at the back. Remember when Bailey Wright was right back and Order Magnuson was left back?
Yeah.
And we had a 6'3" defence, you know, on average. And I can't remember us being that soft as we are now. And then you're looking at midfield players, Brownhill, Pat. You'd have Brownhill and Pat back as they were in midfield tomorrow, I think.
Of course you would.
Because we haven't seen enough of Joe Williams. And you could play one of them in a 4-3-3 with those two. So looking at it, I think we need, like I say, I want to see a very strong, physically competitive side.
That's a bit like a Warnock side or a Mick McCarthy side. Guys,
he wants players that can tackle.
Let's wrap it up now. I mean, one person who is available now, but who could come as a coach, and that's Chris Powell, who I think he's worked with before, and that would be a good addition.
He's with Spurs, I think.
He might come as an assistant coach or whatever. Yeah, yeah. I mean, guys, look, 1 year ago today, almost today, 24,000 were in Ashton Gate to see the 1-1 draw against Fulham. I say we haven't been allowed back, at least there's a bit of light at the end of the tunnel. Interestingly, and I'll put this in the header to this episode, only two of that starting lineup started this afternoon's game. So it's just been 12 months. I think you're right. Yeah, it's been 12 months of, you know, all the traumas of COVID, but 12 months to add to 2 years of just rank depression of, you know, we need to be lifted. Nigel Pearson is that man to lift us, and I hope before the end of the month that we get him signed up on a contract. Thanks for everybody who's listened today. As always, I say we got a week off, which is good. We'll be back next Saturday after the game against Birmingham. And because of COVID, the Tuesday game against Blackburn on the 17th of March, it's actually my birthday, but I'll be doing one of these. So hopefully we might be reporting on the two wins back to back. You never know. Mark and Ian and everybody who's sent texts in, we probably have more texts than ever before. Thanks a lot for listening and enjoy the rest of your weekends. All the best.
Thanks a lot. Cheers, everybody. Take care.
All the best, everybody. Ta-da.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.